So we'll start tonight. We're starting the new Sefer Shmos. And I asked Rishus from Sherry that the learning that we do this month, these shiurim should be Lili Nishmas, Shifra Rivka, Bas, Yechiel, Yitzchak, Elchanan, Yitzchak, Visara Trena. I know her mother's name a little bit better. Sara Trena. And Mrs. Shifra Hirschfuss Epstein, who was really a regal mother in Israel, and who very much appreciated thoughts of Torah, and that the Torah that we learned tonight, and the Torah not only that's learned here, but those that listen to the shir and learn from a recording, also that should be L'Aliyas Nishmasa. And we're going to come to some very fascinating diyukim tonight, as is the Derech of Rav Schwab. We're learning Rav Schwab Sefer, Mayan Beis HaShoeva. And starting in Parsha Shemos, we're going to take some stories that we know, and we're really going to look at some very, very important diyukim. And the first is Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud Aleph, page 294. And in fact, this is a pasuk that is quoted on Seder night, one of the most exalted evenings in the Jewish calendar. This pasuk is actually quoted Seder night. The pasuk tells us, "Vayasimu alav sarei misim leman anoso b'sivlosam," that Paro put on the Jewish people sarei misim, taskmasters. Literally, you might want to translate them as tax collectors. But sarei misim means mas. Why is tax called a mas? Meaning something that presses, right? Leman anoso b'sivlosam, to further oppress them with their burdens. Okay? So Rav Schwab asks a very simple question. What does it mean that it seems that the act of giving the sarei misim was an act of further oppression? And why is that? So what's the classic understanding? The classic understanding is that the sarei misim, the taskmasters, would beat the Jews if they didn't do their job, right? So the further oppression was not only were they subjected to harsh conditions and like impossible tasks, right? That's the latter half of the pasuk, Vayiven Ari Miskenos Leparos Pisomes Ramses, but they were even being beaten as they were doing it. However, Rav Schwab takes a different approach from a pasuk much, much later in the Torah, and this is where it comes into Seder night. If you'll turn to page 1068 in the Chumash. I know, we're going to the summer. We're fast-forwarding a lot of months to the beginning of Parshas Kisavo. And how does it come up at the Seder? Because we know that in the beginning of Parshas Kisavo, page 1068, 1069, is the mitzvah of Bikurim, the mitzvah of bringing the first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. And we know there's a mitzvah of Mikra Bikurim, that there's a special section that we read, that we declare when we bring the first fruits. And if you look at Pasuk Vav, and we're Dorish, right? Arami Ovid Avi Ve'erd Mitzrayma Vayagar Shavim Se'ma'at. And if you look in Pasuk Vav, it says, Vayareyu Osanu HaMitzrim Vaya'anunu Vayitnu Aleinu Avoda Kasha. So what does Vayareyu Osanu HaMitzrim mean? Vayareyu osanu hamitzrim, some say that vayareyu osanu hamitzrim means that they mistreated us, as you'll see in the article, that they did ra to us. But vayareyu osanu hamitzrim also is translated by many Rishonim and Achronim that the Egyptians made us into demons. They demonized us. They made us evil. Right? And in fact, what's the proof text for that in the Haggadah? Kemosh Nemar. The pasuk right before in our parsha, Hava nischak malo pen yirbe, v'haya ki sekrena milchama, v'nosaf gam hu al sonenu, v'lincham banu v'ala min ha'aretz. Right? When Paro tells his people, let's deal wisely with the Jewish people because maybe they're going to become so powerful, and when an external enemy comes to do war, make war against us, what are they going to do? They're going to join our enemy. What's Paro doing to the Jews in Mitzrayim? He's basically labeling them as the other. They're not real Mitzrayim. They're the other. They're going to join in with enemies that come against us. They're becoming so powerful in our society. What do we have to do? we have to constrict them. We have to enslave them because they're going to become too powerful. So meaning in the Haggadah, what does it mean, Vayareyu Osanu Amitzrim, that the Egyptians made us evil? That's what Paro did in the eyes of his countrymen, in the eyes of the Egyptians. He demonized us. He made us into the enemy. He made us into this other, right? And then what is the pasuk in Kisavu continue? Vayaanunu. And he oppressed us. And what is the proof text for oppressing us? The proof text for oppressing us is guess which pasuk, right? Our pasuk, right? So what is anoso? It's not the avodah kasha, because that's the end of the pasuk in Kisavu. So what's the anunu? What is putting sarei misim upon us, an act of oppression? So Rav Schwab said, because by putting sarei misim on top of the Jewish people, taskmasters, you know what he was telling them? He was saying, you're such low lives. I need people to be watching you all the time. I don't trust you. You're no goodniks. And that's what the sarei misim, meaning it was psychological subjugation. It wasn't, right. It wasn't, well, that was the Hava Nischakmalo. The Hava Nischakmalo was making them into the scapegoats. You know, they can, but here there's a second level. The second level is, once we have to be afraid of them, once we have to watch them, now we're going to put people on top of them because we're making very clear we don't trust them. You're nefarious. You already have plots against us. There's a secret cabal that you're going to have. And this is considered a form of oppression. Just by having these people watching out for the... It's telling the Jew, you're not moral, upstanding people. We always have to make sure that you're actually doing your work because we don't trust you. And this is really something Rav Gedalia Shor in his Ar Gedalia talks about, that so much of the process of the enslavement of the Jewish people was psychological and emotional. Of course, there was the Avodah Kasha, and that's the last thing. That's the last thing the Pasuk talks about. And again, is it the last thing just because it was the final, it was the culmination of the process that began with the demonization of the Jews, and Vayanunu, the oppression, making laws to constrict their ability to move freely in Egyptian society, and what they were allowed to do and what they were not allowed to, and finally it culminated with Avodah Kasha, when they actually just put them in chains, and actually were whipping them. That's how some see it. It's just that natural progression. But others point out that it wasn't just, chronological, but it is that evolution of taking the Jews and beginning with the subtle, subtle emotional, psychological enslavement. Yeah.
It sounds so much like the Holocaust.
Absolutely. We know that Galus Mitzrayim, the Egyptian exile, is really, our Chazal tell us, all the other exiles are going to be found in Egypt. And the more you study what happened in Egypt, it's supposed to be lessons for us what not to do. But really, that's, and again, remember Rav Schwab, who we're learning from, he grew up in Germany. He escaped right before the Holocaust and was a rabbi there and came to be a rabbi in Baltimore, Maryland before moving to Manhattan, to Washington Heights. He was the head of the Yaki community, KAJ. And so this is something that is really a fascinating idea, and also it tells us about the importance of a person's dignity. You know, Sherry's mom told me a great story that in Rotterdam they were very, very charitable, and it was known that the policemen in Rotterdam, in Holland, knew that if you found a Jewish collector on the street, they were often brought to your grandparents' house. And one time, one of these aniim, she said, they sat him down. Like, if they ever came for money, the people were instructed that you sit him down, ask him if they want food. And as they bring the food to him, he takes the silverware that he's being served with and takes out this dirty red handkerchief and, like, inspects the silverware and shines the silverware. And Sherry's mom said, she was a young girl, she was, like, cracking up, and her mother shot her a look, like, don't say anything. And her mother explained to her after, why was this person doing it? Because accepting staka can sometimes make a person feel like a lot. So he did this to do what? That he feels good about himself, that he's checking to see if this silverware is good enough for him. But to quote her grandmother, don't worry, we'll wash it anyway, right? We don't know if it's on that handkerchief. They would wash it. But this is the idea of Yasimu alav sari misim laman anoso besiv losam, that while they were suffering, Pyro wanted to mentally and emotionally oppress them. While they were, meaning anosam besiv losam, that while they're doing the avodah kasha, and aside from just the physical labor, there's that emotional and psychological burden, and how it teaches us how important it is for us to see the dignity of every human being. And of course, we've discussed this many times, that Rav Matisyahu Solomon points out that, you know, the development of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the development of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, we see three stories about him. Each one is about Moshe Rabbeinu recognizing the dignity of a person. But this will lead us to the next thing that I wanted to talk about. A question I've had for a long time. And I'm still not clear. I'm going to share with you his idea. But I'm going to leave it as a question. Those that in Shul Friday night, when I give a Dvar Torah, I always like to leave with a question that people can discuss it at their meals, right? I like to leave beginning of, before laning, we give questions. So we all know the famous story that when Moshe grows up, Medrash assumes he's around 20 years old. This is page 298, 299, the beginning of Shlishi. Moshe grows up and he goes out to his brethren, Vayar b'siv losam, and he sees their suffering and he sees an Egyptian hitting a Jew, Ish Ivri me'achav, right? Twice in that pasuk it says echav, right? He kills the Egyptian and he buries the body in the sand. And he looks, he sees there's no one. So what does that mean, there's no one? There are a lot of different pshatim. What's the simple pshat of he sees there's no one? Right, exactly, Lana. People say he sees no one else is doing anything, so he steps in. Pasha pshat is vayar kenish, meaning no one would report him. No one would be able to say what happens. Vayetze beyom hasheni, he goes out on the second day, v'inei shnei anoshim ivrim nitzim, there are two Jews fighting. Vayomer lo rasha lo masak ereyecha, he says to the rasha, meaning the one who's lifting his hand and beating the other Jew, why are you hitting your friend? So pasuk yedalet, verse 14. Vayomer mi samcha l'ish sar v'shofet oleinu, who put you as an officer and a judge above us? Halargeniata Omer, Kasha Haraktes Amitzri, are you going to kill me the way you killed that Egyptian? Vayira Moshe, Moshe became afraid, Vayomar, and he says, Acheno da davar, woe, this matter is now known. The next pasuk, Vayishma Paro Sadavar Azeh, Paro hears of this matter, Vayivakish Laharoges Moshe, and he wants to kill Moshe, and Moshe runs away from Paro. Okay? So, first question. And there's so much background material we don't really know here. We're not really sure. We know Chazal, we know that Moshe to nurse is taken where? Where is he taken to nurse? Who is his wet nurse?
His mother.
Chazal tell us he was there for about 2-3 years, right? So that's very important because 3 years, that's already a child that might have a sense of understanding, right? Child, think of an upsharon, right? So he hops a little bit. But then he's taken back to the palace. He's taken back to the palace and he's brought up as an Egyptian. He's Paro's grandson. So when he sees two Jews fighting, he's dressed as a Mitzri, right? Because we know that. How do we know that? Because when they go to the well, when he goes to the well and he saves Yisro's daughters, they save Atomarna Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miad Haroim. An Egyptian saved us. I mean, Moshe looked like an Egyptian. He didn't look like an Ivri. He looked like an Egyptian. So who are these two Jews to say to Paro's grandson, who made you the Sar V'Shofet? Are you crazy, Jews? You're saying that to Paro's grandson? Were they insane? How did they say that to Paro's grandson? And then all of a sudden, Moshe is so afraid. He was Paro's grandson. So what? He killed an Egyptian. You think the rule of law was so great that Paro's family was subject to the same laws? Obviously they weren't, as we see from the next few parshios. It was always a different standard for Paro and ostensibly his family and everyone else. So why all of a sudden now it's known and he runs away? Because when Paro hears it, Paro wants to kill him. I understand, Paro hears he wants to kill him right away. Why? This is his grandson. He grew up from age 3 to 20 in the palace, right? Why does Paro want to kill him? Because he heard he killed an Egyptian who was beating a Jew? Maybe he could say, listen, this guy was a cruel guy who was just killing them. You know, you want to get the work out of them. This guy was a sadistic guard. You can't have a guy like this working in our work detail. Come on. So what's going on here? So Rav Schwab says, fascinating approach, that Moshe's identity was really not as a Jew. Meaning his external identity was not as a Jew. Somehow, Dasan and Aviram, these two troublemakers, they knew who Moshe was. And why, again, he says sometimes with hatred, you're able to see that object of hatred and, you know, pull away layers. It's unclear. But Dasan and Aviram, when they're telling him, you're going to kill us like you killed that Mitzri, we know who you are. That act of killing a Mitzri showed us that you know who you're identifying with? You're identifying with your Jewish upbringing. And that's what Moshe's not afraid that Paro finds out that he killed an Egyptian. He's a grandson of the Pharaoh. That's not the concern. What's the concern that Moshe's afraid of? Right. Now is going to come out that he's really identifying with the Jews. And that's why Paro wants to kill him. Because whether Paro was concerned that the midrashim of the Jewish, or Paro's furious, right? He was afraid that in the palace he had, and that's why Moshe had to run away. Thus in Aviram, for all he knows, they're going to go to Paro. We have a juicy tidbit for you. You know who's been growing up in your house, a Jewish spy. Who knows what they were going to say? So that's why he runs away. Because I have to be honest, the question was I was bothered by for years, mamish. Meaning, who are Dasan Aviram to talk this way to Moshe Rabbeinu? He was dressed like a Mitzri, as we know from Yisro's daughters. And as a Mitzri, we know who he was. So, but the very fact, and that's why it was so important, Vayifen Kovacho Vayarkienish. That's why, as Alana, as you pointed out, he's so afraid to kill the Mitzri in front of anyone else. Because as Paro's grandson, and the Medrash says that he was actually an advisor, that Paro elevated him, he had a position of power in Paro's government, that is unforgivable. And that really tips his hand as to who he really, really is. So that's an interesting pshat. Again, how did Dasan Aviram know? I'm still not sold on that. I'm still not 100% sure how they knew that. And I leave that as a tzarchin. That's the question. Rav Schwab has this idea about hatred. He says he's trying. I'm not convinced of that. Yeah, Lana?
So maybe that's how they knew. Because,
meaning that in the Jewish society, there were these shmuos of a Jew who was in Paro's palace. It could be. Jews, secrets.
Some Mitzrayim that were defending Jews. So,
right.
He stand out as somebody that was.
Right. It could be that it was so strange in society. Right, it'd have to be something like that. That Dasan Aviram, right, I guess, if seeing that, if it was such a charig, such an exception. An Egyptian to kill an Egyptian who was beating a Jew, what? You know, I guess, right, Shari, putting it in the context of Nazi Germany. You know, imagine
a
German
hit
a Nazi guard for, right?
He couldn't help himself.
Something like that. I guess something like that. Putting it in that context, maybe that's pshat. Okay? All right, moving right along with questions on the Parsha, trying to understand the Parsha a little bit deeper. Page 302. Now, this is fascinating, and we'll get to a broader discussion as to what went on. But Moshe's conversation with God at the burning bush is something that needs to be learned and learned again and learned again and learned again. It's first of all, do you know how long they were at the bush debating? Right? Possibly a week. It could be this was a week worth of conversation, a week of Moshe and God going back and forth. But what's interesting is that in page 302, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Vav, God says, Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Adonai Ra'o Ra'isi Asani Ami, Asher B'Mitzrayim, I've seen the impoverished state of my nation in Egypt, Vest Akasam Shamati Mipnei Nogzav, and I've heard their cries because of their those that are hurting them, abusing them, Ki Adati Esmacho Vav, because I know their pain. Ve'ered Lahatzilo Miad Mitzrayim, I will go down to save him from the hands of Egypt, meaning like the Jewish people as one, ulhalosom min haaretz ahi, and bring him up from that land, el eretz tova urechava, el eretz zavas chalav udvash, el makom haknani v'achiti v'amori v'prizi v'achivi v'ayvusi. V'hinei v'ata hinei tz'akaz b'nei Yisrael ba'elai v'gam ra'isias alachas asher mitzrayim lo chatzim osam. So what's very interesting, Rav Schwab points out, and I never noticed it, I never thought about it until this point, almost any other place where God is talking about the redemption and bringing the people up, what is, and he's describing Israel, how does he describe Eretz Canaan? The land that I swore to give to your forefathers, right? Over here, Hashem doesn't mention that. He's saying Eretz Tov or Chava El Eretz Avos Chalav Advash, and great, great beaches in Israel. Wonderful, wonderful shopping, you know, great, great museums. Like, what's he telling them? Really? Iker Chas, as we say, Iker Chasar Manasefer, the main point is lacking from the book. This is the land. And you should know what? There are times later on where you will see that he talks about it. He talks about the land that I promised to give to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. I'm going to bring you there. So why all of a sudden here does he leave it out? And Rav Schwab suggests that you look at the pasuk before, Vayomer Hashem ra'o ra'isi asani ami, right? Ve'ered v'hatzilo miad Mitzrayim. This, there are two reasons that Hashem is going to take us out of Egypt. One is, it was part of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. He told Avraham, Avraham had a prophecy, that your children are going to go down to a foreign nation, they're going to be subjugated and enslaved there, and then I will take them out. That's one aspect of it. But you know what the other aspect of it is? The other aspect of it is what Hashem tells Moshe to go tell Paro, page 310, Parak Dalet, Pasuk Chav Beis. And again, this Pasuk is like a throwaway Pasuk. It's like a Pasuk that goes in and out, but you'll understand this Pasuk is so pivotal to the whole story, to the story of what happens with Moshe and Tzipora on the way back to Egypt with all the Makos, right? Va'amarta el paro, ko amar Adonai, bini b'chori Yisrael. The Jewish people are my firstborn child. Meaning, there's one aspect of redemption that's fulfillment of the promise to the patriarchs and the matriarchs. There's another reason for Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is what? Which is what? Because Hashem loves us. It has nothing to do with Avram Yitzchak Yaakov per se. Hashem views each and every one of us as his beloved child. And Ribono Shel Olam here, when he tells Moshe Rabbeinu why he's doing it the very first time, he's saying that I'm going to take them out because I love them. And I'm going to bring them to a land, not to the land of their ancestors. I'm going to bring them to a great land. I want them to be okay. I want that. Yes, I want them to have great food and great beaches and great weather. I mean, and that's what Ribono Shel Olam wants. That it's a function of Avas Hashem Osanu, Hashem's great love for us. And that's why in the very beginning of this conversation, this is what he wants to share. But there's also, according to Rav Schwab, a very important, important word that is mentioned here in Pasuk Ches, that really has to do with another Torah here. And Rav Schwab asks a very interesting question. He says, in the Torah we find two people fighting with Hashem, right? The two people would probably be the last ones that we would expect to fight with Hashem. Who fights with Hashem in the Torah? Moshe right here, and who else? Avram, right? Where does Avram argue with Hashem? About destroying Sodom. Right? About destroying Sodom. Avram argues with Hashem about destroying Sodom. And he says, it's quite remarkable, because Avram Avinu, the one that is the founder of our faith, Umatzasa Levavo Ne'eman Lefanecha, that the Navi tells us that Avram's heart was Ne'eman to Hashem, and also later on in the Torah. How was Moshe described? After B'chol Beisi Ne'eman who? The two people that are described as Ne'eman with great emunah in Hashem, right, ironically enough, are the two people in the Torah that call God to task. And with Moshe, we know it becomes harsh. We know at the end of the parsha, after his first confrontation with Paro, and things get worse for the Jewish people. Vayomer Adonai lama hariosa la'am hazez lama zesh lachtani. Moshe says, why are you doing bad to this nation? Why did you send me? It was Basi al Paro, mamish, the very end of Shemos. L'daber b'shmecha. You keep talking that your nation, but everything's just been going bad for them. How do you do this? What is this? How do Moshe and Avram, how are they the two? Right? Avram, the one that when God told him, bring your own son and offer him up as a karban, what does Avram say? Nothing. So many of the nisyonos that Avram faced, nothing. And okay, himself? This wasn't himself. Akeda wasn't himself. It was killing his son. That's still another person. If you want to say, no, Sodom was because it was other people. Akeda was another person. Chevra, our kids are other people, right? We have to know that. We are not our children. Our children are not us, right? If you didn't get that from Rabbi Horowitz, okay. Right? So what's going on here? So Rav Schwab, fascinating. And it fits into two other places. He says, the key is the word Ered in Pasuk Ches. The Ered Lahatzilo. And I'll go down to save them. And also by the Akeda, not by the Akeda, excuse me, by Sodom and Amora, we have the Lashon of the Pasuk, page 82-83. Erdana, the Ere, I will go down and I will see. The Lashon of Ered, the Lashon of Yored to go down, implies that normally, you're right, Hashem is totally unknowable. His ways are totally hidden from us. But when there's a Lashon of Ered going down, Hashem is saying, I'm going to reveal to you, and now is the time when you can question. Meaning, I'm coming down to your level, I'm giving it to you, tell me what you think. That's the Lashon of Ered. God coming down. And that's why, in the beginning of the Sodom episode, God says, I'm coming down, right? And over here, Hashem says, Ered, like, what is Ered? What do you mean God's coming down? God has to come down? We all know the Uncle Moshe song, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, ever, up, up, down, down. What does it mean God has to come down? That means Hashem says, I'm lowering myself to be understood. I'm allowing myself to be perceived in a way that otherwise you couldn't. And Rav Schwab has two proofs. Beautiful. Beautiful. Chevra, do you know what it is when you learn Torah? Do you know what Torah is? Right? When God spoke to the Jewish people for the first time, when Hashem spoke to all of the Jewish people for the first time, what was the first word he uttered? What? Anochi. You know what Anochi stands for? I know it's Parshas Yisro. I don't know when Parshas Yisro is yet. When's Parshas Yisro? Okay, 4 weeks. I don't know where am I in 4 weeks. I don't know. Winter break. Many of you won't be here. Okay. So what does Anochi stand for? Ana, Nafshi, Ksavis, Yehavis. That's Aramaic for I am writing my soul and I'm giving it to you. You know what the Torah is? The Torah is God. It's an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's God's ratzon, his will. How can a human being understand God's will? How is that possible? And in terms of understanding God's will, not only do we understand God's will, but what happens? We're supposed to take Torah and we're supposed to manipulate it. We're supposed to, so much so that the famous Gemara in Baba Metzia tells us when there was a debate about the Tumar Tara status of an oven, and Rebbe Lazar says that if I'm right, a baskol will come out from heaven and say I'm right. Yeah? And the baskol came out and announced what? Halacha ke'elazar b'ni. And what did Rabbi Yeshua do? Rabbi Yeshua stands up on his feet and says, lo bashamayim hi. God, you have nothing to say. Really? talk about chutzpah. That's greater than the chutzpah of Avram and Moshe. I mean, Rabbi Yeshua was great. Greater than Avram? Greater than Moshe? Hard to say. Maybe Rabbi Akiva was greater than Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu thought Rabbi Akiva was greater than him, the Gemara Menachos tells us. But what? What? How could you tell God, get out of here? Because, what does Rav Schwab say? Look at Mamish, the Aliyah that begins the Aseres Hadibros. What's the first word in the Aliyah that begins the Aseres Hadibros? Well, you know what the word is? Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. God came down. God came down. What does that mean? God coming down means I'm letting you understand me. And that's what the Torah is. The Torah is the way of understanding Hashem. And what's the other proof text he has? Mamsh, the two most important revelations in Sefer Shemos, and one could argue the two most important revelations in all of existence, right? Where else do we find it? In the aftermath of the sin of the golden calf, page 508, 509, when Moshe Rabbeinu asks God, show me your glory. And he says, listen, I can't show you my glory. Lo yirani adam v'chai. I'll tell you and I have to kill you, right? But what does he tell him? He says, I will reveal, what? The yid gimel midos harachamim. The yud gimel midos harachamim. I'm going to reveal to you the essence of how I relate to this world. And we know how it relates, al pi Kabbalah, with the yud gimel midos. And again, we say this many, many times. Over Yom Kippur, at Ne'ilah, what's the introduction, the introductory pasuk to Yid Gimel Midos? Right here, Perek Lamed Aleph, pasuk A. What does it start with? Vayered Adonai be'anon, vayisat sevi Moshem, vayikra b'shem Adonai. Vayered. God went down. And Rav Schwab says, whenever you find this lashon of Ered, of Hashem saying, I'm going to go down, what does that mean? It means Hashem saying, I'm allowing you to understand me. I'm allowing you to understand me. And so that's what Torah is. That's what tshuva is. Again, tshuva shouldn't work. Tshuva is, right, when all the Mefarshim talk about this. What is tshuva? It's not only that you violated the king's decree, but you violated the doctor's decree. A sin is spiritually damaging to you, right? So imagine if you go to your doctor and your doctor says you have you're deathly allergic to watermelon, right? And you go to your doctor one day, I don't understand, I ate an orange, and look what's happening. Orange, it doesn't make, bring me the orange. And you bring him an orange, and the doctor goes, you fool, that's not an orange, that's a watermelon. What do you mean, someone told me it's an orange? That's a watermelon, it's not an orange. So tell me, does feeling sorry change anything? No. You ate it. So an Aveira creates a spiritual reality. How does tshuva work? God is giving us that insight to something that shouldn't make sense. Vayered Hashem be'anon. God comes down and he gives us the Yid Gimel Midos HaRachamim. And that's why Moshe and Avram are the two people in the Torah that are referred to as Ne'eman. They're the trusted ones. They're the ones with the greatest faith. And yet, they're the ones that call Hashem to task. Why? How? Because Vayered. A lashon of Hashem saying, I'm coming down to meet you. Now, we're meeting. Now ask. Try and understand. And the act of Torah, of us learning together, is trying to understand Hashem. That's really what it is. That's why learning Torah creates such a bond, because when you understand another, that's when there's connection. Adam yada es chava ishto, that's what it means to know. That's what it means to connect in a very meaningful, intimate, deep way. And we'll end with one more idea, just a beautiful idea. You know, maybe I'll just leave this as a question. I told you I'd give questions. Maybe I'll just leave this as a question. Should I leave you with a question?
No.
No? Too tired. No. You don't want to. You like answers? Okay. You know, Charles.
Give us the answer, and then we'll try to figure.
I'll figure out the question. Well, I'll show you the pasuk. Someone here will. You know, that's what I really love, Rav Schwab Mamsh. Just close reading of psukim. Just close reading of psukim. 308. 308. We were there just before. Okay. Page 308. Oh, no, we were on 508, sorry. But 308. So Moshe Rabbeinu in this back and forth, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Moshe al Adonai, Bi Adonai, lo ish devar manochi, gam etmol, gam mishulshom, gam me'oz da bercha el avdecha, ki chvad peh, chvad loshon anochi. Right? So that's why some people say, you know how many days they've been talking. Yesterday, 3 days ago, some say it's 3 days, and 2 days, and today. So meaning there were 6 days they were there debating. I can't speak. Vayomer Adonai Elov. Hashem says to him, Misam Pel Adam. Who gave a mouth to a person? Umiyasum Ilem. Or who makes a person Elaim. Elaim, there are different interpretations. How does Art Scroll translate it? One, someone dumb, meaning Elaim means like someone that's crippled, perhaps. Ocheresh, deaf mute. O Pikeach, or Pikeach. What's Pikeach? Someone that can see. Right? Pokeach Ivrim, every morning. Give sight to those that are blind. O Iver is blind person. Halo Nochi Hashem, is it not I God? So one second, you know that old... that old Sesame Street game on, these things are not like the other, right? That's such an important game when you learn Chumash. Because which of these things are not like the other? Pikeach. You're talking about blemishes, and you say, who created the person that can see? Oh, if you want to say, oh, it's O-Iver. Okay, so it's opposites. What's the opposite of Cheresh? What's the opposite of Elaim? We don't find those listed. So why does it say opikeach here, implying that's like a blemish? Mom, this is a wild. You want the answer?
Yes.
The answer is wild. The answer, you have to turn back. There was a Rebbe I had who always said, it always comes down to Bereshis. And not Sefer Bereshis, Parshas Bereshis. Not just Parshas Bereshis, it all comes down to the story of Adam and Chava. Everything comes back to the story of Adam and Chava, right? So you'll see. It really does. It really comes back to the story of Adam and Chava. Just when you think you're out of Bereshis, you go back to Bereshis, right? Right? What was that book? Robert Falcom, Everything I Need to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten. Everything I Need to Know, I really learned it in Bereshis. So we go back to Bereshis. And Adam and Chava sin, right? But you know what's fascinating? After they sin, after they ate from the garden, the fruit, whatever fruit that is, page 16, Paragimel Pasuk Zayin, what happens to them after they eat from the fruit? The lashon of the Pasuk, Vatipakachna Eneshneyan, their eyes open, right? Pokeach, the same lashon. And then they recognize they were naked, and then they sow these fig leaves. And in fact, that's what the Nachash says to them. The Nachash, in trying to get Chava, her, to eat, you won't die. Pasuk Gimel, just the page before, 14. Ki yodea Elohim ki biyom achalchem mimenu v'nifkichu einechem. So Rav Schwab says, Moshe Rabbeinu had a vision of God that was known as Ba'aspaklaria Hami'ira, the clear looking glass. There was no prophet that saw God as clearly as Moshe Rabbeinu. There was only one person, the Gemara in Sota said, had a similar vision to Moshe Rabbeinu. You know who that was? You know who it was? It was Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava were the only ones that had such a vision, because they lived in Gan Eden Kodem Lachet, that was seeing God Bas Baklaria Hameira. And that's why, yes, being able to see in a physical way was actually a step down for them. To Moshe Rabbeinu, with the vision that he had, with the perception of God that he had, seeing regularly was a blemish. You know, and that's what they say about the Vilna Gaon. One of his students wrote about him in the introduction to his commentary on a very difficult part of Halacha, of the Shulchan Aruch. He wrote about his Rebbe, and he wrote that my Rebbe's feet walked on the same earth that my feet walked on, that our feet walked on, but he lived in a different world. When the Vilna Gaon would look at things, he just saw things differently. They say by the end of his life, the Vilna Gaon, you know how he would learn? He would open up a Sefer Torah, he would open up a Sefer Torah, and he would just read. And people say, what do you see? He goes, I see everything. He saw everything in the Torah. Again, we can't understand what he saw. We can't be masig. We can't comprehend on any level. But he saw everything when he would read Bereshis Bara Elokim, Es Shamayim V'Saharetz. He saw everything. And so that's what Vatipakach, the Rav Schwab, suggests. that yes, seeing with physical eyes is actually a blemish. So what type of eyes are we supposed to be seeing with? So that's you know the answer, but we'll work through it ourselves. Shkoyach. I'm late for a meeting with some people who are here. Shkoyach, thank you for coming.